What's your favorite part of your body? What do you admire about yourself physically? For me, it's gotta be my breast and my ass. Almost every person I've been with has complimented them. And while I don't show them off much by wearing low-cut clothes or TikTok leggings, I do appreciate them, especially when they're being played with in the bedroom. Now, what would you do if your favorite feature had the potential of making you deathly ill? Of giving you cancer? Would you remove it to prevent potentially battling a disease down the line? For Kelly Iverson, the answer was tragic, but simple.
Fuck that. Like, you can cut them off. Like, I don't want this, you know, foreboding diagnosis over my head for the rest of my life.
This is How I Fuck, and I'm your host, Natalie Rivera. Breasts. Many love to play with them, and many people with breasts love to have them played with. One study found that breasts can increase in size up to 25% when you're aroused, potentially making them extra sensitive. In fact, studies show that nipple stimulation activates the same region of the brain as clitoral and vaginal stimulation, which is probably why it's no surprise that nipple stimulation was reported to enhance sexual arousal in 82% of women, including Kelly.
If I was about to orgasm, all you had to do was like grab my breasts or like pinch my nipples and it was like done. Like, they just were really, they just played a really large role in my satisfaction in my sex life.
Kelly is gorgeous and kind of a rebel. She has short reddish hair and tattoos all over one of her arms. A writer residing in LA, Kelly likes to post about how she's embracing her wild side and her sexuality, two things she almost never did when she was younger.
I remember there were sex ed classes and I would normally skip out on them and just do my time and take the detention because like the thought of even discussing sex was like so grotesque to me.
Why did you find it grotesque back then?
I think I just didn't know really anything about it. I didn't even know what a penis looked like until literally I drew one upside down. So, you know, when people draw penises on desks, like you don't really know which way's the top and the bottom. So I remember I just drew a stick person and I drew the penis upside down. And my friends were like, why the fuck did you draw it like that? I'm like, what do you mean? Like, it's just a guy with a penis. So, God, I literally was probably a sophomore in high school when I figured that out, which thank God I did before like a sexual encounter. Can you imagine if I was like being intimate with someone and was like, whoa, your balls are like not in the right place.
So yeah, younger Kelly wasn't informed. She also was pretty set on falling in love and settling down. She had different priorities back then.
So my first official boyfriend was when I was a junior in high school and I was a dumbass and I followed him to college and I imagined this like incredibly boring life that we would have together. My mom recalls me actually telling her, I can't wait to grow old with this person and do mundane things like go grocery shopping and go to the bank. And now those are like my least favorite things to do as an adult. So I'm so happy that I had a shift in attitude as to like what will make me happy. And yeah, I thought he was going to be the one, you know, he was my first everything. And we were on and off for forever.
Because this was Kelly's first relationship, she was a bit insecure about it. She was pretty sure her boyfriend had sex before, making her the least experienced of the two.
I literally knew nothing. Like, I didn't even know how to properly kiss, if you will. Like, I remember tongue kissing. I was, like, Googling, like, how to. So I was just really bad at everything, or very unexperienced, not bad, unexperienced at everything. And I remember when we first started to get intimate, like the very first time, I was just like, let's just skip everything and do it. Like, no hand jobs, no nothing. Like, let's just get straight to sex because I thought, you know, I didn't want to have so many new things happening at once. I was like, let's just get this over with and I'll go home and Google how to give a hand job like later. I feel like we didn't really get to that point of like exploration because I just feel like we were so young and like I just wasn't very confident. So like where now I'm like, hell yeah, let's explore XYZ. Back then I was like, let's just stick to missionary and do nothing else because I'm too scared to try anything else.
They broke up right before college started, but they would still get together periodically the next 3 years. During that time, Kelly would have a string of one-night stands with other people. No new serious relationships, just fun. She still wasn't vocal about what she wanted, though, and was still hesitant about exploring.
I don't know, I was just really insecure and didn't have a great body image. I was in a mindset where, like, as long as the person I was with was enjoying themselves, like, I was enjoying myself.
This stopped being the case after college, though. Kelly, who went to school for journalism, wasn't having much luck finding writing jobs in Kansas City at the time. As a journalist myself, I can totally relate to that. Starting a career in journalism can be difficult.
I went to go apply at the newspaper in Kansas City, and the only job that they had available at the time was, like, I don't know if you've seen, Nightcrawler with Jake Gyllenhaal, where he just, like, rides around at night and looks for crime and, like, writes about it. That was the only job they had available. And I was like, fuck that. I'm like 20, whatever. I don't really want to ride around alone, like, looking for crime. So my dad lived in He lived in Thailand when he was a teenager because his dad was a pilot. And I just remember him and his siblings speaking really highly of Thailand, of all the places they had ever lived. And so I was like looking up Bangkok, and there wasn't a whole lot written on the city. And so I thought, okay, if there was anywhere that I could go and work as a travel writer and be successful, it would be Bangkok because it's such a big place. There's so much to do there, and it just was really underreported. So I moved there with the hopes of becoming a travel writer, and I did.
That's really cool. And I hope this doesn't seem like insulting or anything, but that was also kind of surprising given that you're, you know, telling me that you were insecure in some places and in some areas of your life. And so to do something like that, it sounds completely different from how you used to be.
Yeah, it's really weird. I feel like my whole being is like a big contradiction. If I go to restaurants with my friends, I'll be like, can you ask them for more ketchup? And they're like, what? Like, you lived in Asia alone for years and you can't ask the waiter for, like, extra ketchup? Like, it's just ridiculous.
It was in the busy streets of Thailand where Kelly started shedding her younger, reserved self, only to make room for a more independent, outspoken Kelly.
It's just such a wild place. When I was living there, I embraced that craziness in all aspects of my life.
Yeah, if you're looking to reinvent yourself, then Thailand is a great choice. While I've never been to Thailand myself, I've heard from friends about how much activity there is there. And according to Kelly, there's also a lot of sexualized activity.
Sex is definitely in your face. I wouldn't say all the time, but like a lot in Bangkok. You know, there's like Soi Cowboy with all the strip clubs. Like, there's so many different sois, which are like alleyways that are just lined with topless bars and things like that. And it's totally acceptable and normal there, at least from like a civilian perspective. And so I don't know if that had some, like, had a part to play in, like, me coming into my own body and just being, like, more comfortable with myself. But it was definitely so different than what you're seeing in Kansas.
By then, Kelly was also more comfortable in her body, something that was a bit of a struggle for her growing up. You see, Kelly struggled a lot with disordered eating. The only part of her body that she really liked and that she didn't mind getting bigger were her breasts. She adored her breasts.
I used to refer to my breasts as like breasts of steel. Like, you could put so much pressure on them and they like wouldn't feel any pain, and not in like a crazy like BDSM like fashion, but just like I just loved having them touched by others and, you know, by me.
Kelly was back in Kansas one year visiting for the holidays when her father shared some news with her and her sisters. His sister had reached out to him about a genetic mutation she had only just learned about that could be a key indicator if someone might develop breast cancer in their lifetime. Kelly's grandmother had actually passed away from breast cancer when Kelly's dad was around 21, and one of her aunts already had it. So her family was worried that Kelly and her sisters would have the gene mutation. They asked Kelly and her sisters to take a blood test that would screen for any mutations. This is known as the BRCA gene test.
My older sister and I went to a genetic counselor when I was home for Christmas. And I remember at the time thinking, like, there's no way I have it. I am like a replica of my mother, like in the way we look, the way we act. And my sister is a lot more similar to my dad. So I thought, okay, if one of us is going to have it, like, surely it's her.
So a little bit about the BRCA test and these gene mutations. Everyone is born with two BRCA genes, or breast cancer genes. They are BRCA1 and BRCA2. Contrary to these names, these genes don't give you breast cancer. They kind of help you fight it. They are tumor suppressor genes that help prevent cells like breast and ovarian from growing and dividing rapidly, and pretty much causing trouble. Some people, however, are born with gene mutations that prevent these genes from doing their job successfully. Those who carry a BRCA mutation are thought to have a 45 to 80% risk of developing breast cancer in their lifetime. People with a history of breast cancer in their family, like Kelly, are encouraged to take this test.
I went back to Bangkok and I didn't have my results back yet. And I remember telling the genetic counselor, like, if I do test positive for this mutation, please tell me via email or voicemail, because I don't want you to call me and then I have to wait 12 hours to hear from you because of the time difference. Or like, what if she calls me on a Friday and then I have to wait all weekend? So I just told her, if it's positive, if it's negative, just tell me on my voicemail or via email. And I remember I was coming out of a yoga class and I had a voicemail from her and she didn't fucking tell me my results. And I was like, this bitch. But I knew right then that like it was positive, because if it had been negative, she would have said that in the voicemail. So I called her back and thankfully she picked up right away. But yeah, I was positive for the BRCA1 genetic mutation. My sister was negative, thank goodness.
She took the train back home bawling. If you've ever been to Bangkok, you'll know that their trains are rarely empty.
I was like shoulder to shoulder and just sitting there crying like unapologetically. In Thailand, it's really big not to lose face. So like me being upset was like probably upsetting for people there.
She went to see a breast specialist shortly after that. The specialist felt a lump in her left breast and requested an MRI. They found three tumors, so they requested an ultrasound to see if they were benign, meaning not cancerous.
So I had an ultrasound biopsy, and they were able to get, like, draw material, or however you say it, from two of the tumors, but one was so deep that I had to do an additional MRI-guided biopsy. And, like, this is all happening in Bangkok, and it was just really intimidating. I remember going into my MRI guided biopsy and they had this needle like the size of my head. And I was like, okay, so wait, can someone walk me through this? No one in the room spoke English. And it was just super intimidating to have like no direction or like guidance as to like, okay, we're going to do this. And I just remember being so upset. And like, they were all so sweet, like, you know, rubbing my shoulder. And like, they didn't know what I was saying. I didn't know what they were saying. But it was then where I was like, I need to get this preventative surgery because I can't fucking do this. Like, this is too much. The biopsies, the doctor visits, I was having to pay for everything up front and then work with my insurance to get the money back. And it was like costing thousands of dollars. And I was just like so over it. So I decided then that I would go home and have the preventative double mastectomy.
Prophylactic mastectomy, or preventative mastectomy, is a procedure that involves surgically removing all breast tissue. The procedure is meant to help avoid any future cancers in the breast. According to the National Cancer Institute, women who have BRCA1 or BRCA2 gene mutations and have a preventative mastectomy may be able to reduce their risk of developing breast cancer by 95%. So Kelly knew that the best option for her was to have both breasts removed, and soon.
There was a little bit of urgency because my dad's health insurance was wonderful. So he was working for the government at the time. And I knew these surgeries were going to be hella expensive and that some shitty travel insurance wasn't going to be like, yeah, we'll pay for this massive surgery and for reconstruction and for, you know, whatever. So I was 25 and I was going to be kicked off my parents' insurance when I was 26 in November. So when I found out I had the mutation in January, I wasn't, you know, sold on the preventative surgery, but then just taking that into consideration as well, I decided it was the right time for me to do that.
When did you decide that you wanted to also have the reconstructive surgery, and how did you come to that decision, or was it like a no-brainer?
So there was a little part of me that wanted to stay flat. just to be like, fuck it. Like, why would I put these foreign things into my body to aesthetically look a certain way? Because I've lost all sensation in my breasts. So they would be purely for aesthetic reasons. But, you know, the more I met with my surgeon and saw the implants, I just thought, I'm already losing like a big, a large part of myself. And if the implants will like give me a little bit of like what I used to have, I'll take them.
Kelly went back home to have the surgery done. As you can imagine, there was a lot going through her mind at this time. She was exhausted from the doctor's appointments, the travel, the constant conversations revolving around the procedure. She wanted to enjoy her breasts one last time before the surgery. So she went on Tinder.
Basically, I was in the mindset of like, I'm going to lose all feeling in my breasts. I'm going to lose all these wonderful sensations that I love so much. I don't have a significant other. And I really want to like enjoy them, like really enjoy them with another person. Now I am in such a good place that I would do that solo and like not seek out another person to give me that pleasure. But at the time I was like, okay, I'm just going to start swiping and see what I get.
Usually when you match with someone cute on Tinder, you'll send them a nice, hello, how are you? Or if you're like me, you'll draft an opening line that references something they have in their bio. Kelly, however, went straight to the point. I mean, she was on a mission after all.
I just told him, like, look, I'm having this surgery and I kind of just want to have sex with someone and like enjoy my breasts while I can still feel them. Like, are you down for that? And he was so sweet. He was like, yeah, like, I'd love to take you to dinner. Meanwhile, I'm like, you know, let's fuck. And he's like, let's have a bite to eat first. And so he took me to this really nice vegan restaurant in downtown Kansas City, and he was so sweet. And then we went back to his place and we had sex, and we had sex a few times leading up to my surgery.
As you might have predicted, the sex was kind of emotional.
Oh my God, I just feel bad for him. I was like so emotional and like always on the verge of crying just because it was like, you know, the last hurrah. Like, I was internally saying my goodbyes and was like always on the verge of tears.
Do you feel like he did all the things that you yourself have always enjoyed when it came to your breasts?
Yes and no. Like I kind of mentioned before, I wish I would have found that pleasure internally and like would have just done the things that I know and love myself. It, you know, instead of putting that on another person for one, because that's such a daunting task. But we met for the first time and it was like, let's do this. And how could he know what I liked and what I didn't? So I think I gave him direction. As much as I can't give you specifics, I can tell you wholeheartedly, like I needed that. You know, he might not see it as such, but it was so special for me. Like it was just, I'm like getting like teary-eyed thinking about it, but like I needed that last really special intimate moment.
The day of the surgery finally arrived, and Kelly's anxiety was understandably turned up a couple notches. She wasn't entirely sure if she was going to wake up with implants or if they were going to do another procedure shortly after.
So I did have breasts when I woke up, which was like, yay. And then that's when it kind of sunk in. It was just a lot. And I actually ended up going back to work like the day after my surgery. I couldn't deal with like what I knew I needed to deal with emotionally and physically. And so I just sat at my little lap desk in my bed and did like mundane kind of brainless work. So I would say that the emotional aspect of what had happened hit me like a few weeks later when I was like, holy shit, like my breasts are gone, you know.
How else did you feel when it hit you? What were some of the thoughts going through your head?
I'm trying to be like more open about it, but I have had an eating disorder for a very long time and I have never really liked my body, you know, like at all. So I just thought this is going to be terrible. Like, how am I going to deal with this? Like I couldn't even deal with my body in like its normal form, you know? And now I have this huge scar. My breasts are hard as a rock. Like at the time they were really ripply. So the implant didn't like fit the pocket as best as it could. So I had like, I just call them ripples, like ripples in the top of my breasts. And it was just really unsightly. And I just remember being like, oh shit, like this is gonna send me into like a spiral in regards to like my confidence and like my body image, because it was already like really not good. I was really worried about my mental state. So I started seeing a therapist, which I should have done way earlier in the process. You know, when I initially had my surgery, it was like, this is going to bring me down every day, or I'm going to think about this every day, and it's going to disrupt my daily life at some point every day. And it doesn't. Like, you know, I'm 2 years out, and like weeks will go by, and then I'll be like, oh my God, I had this life-changing thing happen to me. You know, I'm so happy that I did it and took my health into my own hands. And I realize how lucky I am to take those preventative measures and all that. But it does get easier, you know?
The next 6 months consisted of resting, therapy, and prepping for 2 more surgeries for her implants, which Kelly wasn't too fond of when she first got them. Kelly got to keep her nipples, but the rest of her new breasts seemed so foreign to her.
I was just like, I don't even care. Like, I'm never going to touch them if they don't have feeling, you know? To me, it felt like if I got an implant that felt more realistic, it would be for someone else. And I was like, I'm not doing that. So I got the gel implants. So they do. I mean, they look fake and they're really hard. They're like hard as a rock. But they look good. And I don't have that rippling anymore. Not as bad anyway. So I'm happy with my decision to have the additional surgeries to make them look like, you know, as best as they can.
It was between one of these new surgeries that Kelly went to a friend's wedding and met a guy, a cute guy. Kelly hadn't planned to flirt that night. She wasn't too happy with her body, and keep in mind, she didn't like how her breasts looked like then. But this guy was funny, charming, and danced with her for most of the night.
Next thing I knew, we were going home together, and I was like, holy shit, what is this sexual encounter going to look like? Like, do I tell him now in the car? Like, what do I do? I was so incredibly relieved. He didn't care at all. Like, he didn't even blink when I told him, like, oh, I've had this surgery, and like, don't touch my breasts, and like, maybe don't look at them because they look a little bit funky. Like, he was like, okay. It was at that point where I was like, oh my God, people just don't care. Like, I care a lot, but other people don't. I am so grateful for him for like making me realize that. That was, again, another really special like first time for me. And like that encounter and that whole evening will just have a really special place in my heart. Cause I remember just dreading like being alone and like naked in front of this person. And it was totally fine. And it like didn't matter at all. And, you know, it was just a friendly reminder that like the only person bringing me down, in that sense is me, and like nobody else cares. So I just need to care less.
This encounter made future sexual experiences a little less daunting. She started writing about her double mastectomy and also her lifetime struggle with her body image. It became kind of therapeutic for her. She also started looking for new ways to stimulate herself, since touching her breast isn't something she enjoys anymore.
It's kind of like nails on a chalkboard, where if someone touched my breast, it's just like, oh, I hate it. Sometimes I'll try and work through it because I think that the person I'm with will enjoy touching my breasts, but I've just not given up, but I'm like, I'm not going to make myself uncomfortable so that they can maybe enjoy themselves a little bit more. And to be honest, I don't think that the people I've been with intimately enjoy touching them, because like I mentioned, they're really hard, and like they move a little bit more now, but they don't really move either. So like, I can imagine it's kind of weird for them too. And if I'm sitting there like, ugh, like, I don't think anyone's enjoying it. So it forced me to explore different ways in which I could feel pleasure. So, you know, I guess I just want to say, like, just because you've lost sensation or feeling in one body part, like, you'll find it somewhere else. You just need to find someone you're comfortable enough with to be like, hey, stick a thumb in my ass. Like, let's see what this is like.
No, but really, butt play. It's one of the new things she's picked up since her mastectomy.
Prior to my surgery, like, I never used lubes or any toys. And now, like, I have a whole drawer full, because I'm like, you know, what is this like? What is this like? And, you know, just finding other ways to stimulate myself, because I lost like the biggest thing that made me feel good. So I have like different dildos and butt plugs and like all these different lubes. And, you know, it's kind of fun to explore. And I still think I'm learning about my body and what it is that I like. And it's kind of been nice with the pandemic to do that by myself. And then, you know, down the line, when everyone gets their vaccine and we're all safe to go out and date again, like, I am so excited to like be with someone and like have a checklist of shit that I know that I like.
Kelly is no longer the quiet sexual partner she used to be. It took many years to get here, but she's finally made it, living her life with zero fucks to give and a drawer full of toys.
Now I'm in a place where I'm like, I'm going to fucking tell him whenever I want. Like, I could sit down at a blind date and be like, hi, I have a preventative double mastectomy and also my name's Kelly. And like, that would be fine. Or I could wait like a year and like tell him then, you know? So like, it's nice to be in a place mentally where like some of those concerns are no longer.
Kelly, thank you so much again for speaking with me. I really appreciate it, especially on a Wednesday evening. Where can people find you?
They can find me on Instagram. I think you actually followed me on Instagram, so you're welcome to share that handle.
Kelly's Instagram handle is at Kelly Jean Iverson. Make sure to follow her and check out her amazing articles. Thank you for listening to How I Fuck. If you like our podcast, give us a rating, leave us a review, tell a friend. And please subscribe if you haven't already. Also, if you have a micropenis and would like to be interviewed for the show, email us at hello@howifuckpodcast.com. That's How I Fuck without the U, so F-C-K. Or you can send us a DM on Instagram or Twitter. Our handles are How I Fuck Podcast. That's How I Fuck without the U, so F-C-K. We also have a website, howifuckpodcast.com, again, without the U. There you can find all of our episodes, as well as show notes, transcriptions, sources, and photos. How I Fuck is produced by me, Natalie Rivera. I'm also the host and creator. Ben Quiles is our audio engineer. Cheyenne Lopez did copy and fact check. Original music by Miguel Gutierrez. You can find more of his music online under the artist name, Mag. Gabriela Sanchez is our social media manager, and our sponsorship manager is Muna Koulibaly. Until next time.